We're going to be talking with our next guest, Glenn Washington, in just a moment. He's the host and executive producer of Snap Judgment. He's, however, still looking for a parking place outside of KQED, our member station in San Francisco. In the meantime, Michael Cord has been kind enough to stay behind at our bureau in New York. He's the author of the new biography of T.E. Lawrence, The Life and Legend of Lawrence of Arabia. Hero is its title. And Michael, thanks very much for sticking around and pinch hitting, as it were.
It's my pleasure.
And I wanted to ask you about the effect of Lawrence's celebrity. As you pointed out earlier in our conversation, he was very much at home with those who might have been regarded as his social superiors in those days, when that meant a great deal more than it does now. Nevertheless, he felt weighted down by the expectations of fame.
Well, I think he felt weighted down from the very beginning of his life by the fact that he was illegitimate, one of the five sons of an English aristocrat who had abandoned his four daughters for their governess and then gone on to have five sons. He was enormously oppressed by not only the knowledge of his illegitimacy, but by a genuine and obsessive fear of sexuality. He felt in some way that the sexual desire between his father and his mother had been responsible for his father's immense loss of money, prestige, name even, because he gave up his name, Sir Thomas Chapman, to become Thomas Lawrence. And that Lawrence's pathway to a prevailing spirit of guilt and self-punishment opened up very early in his life, even while he was an adolescent. However, set against that, he was a man of enormous charm, of tremendous good humor, of extraordinary caring for others. He was perhaps one of the most brilliant and prolific letter writers of anybody in English history. And had a gift for friendship which was almost unique. His friends included almost everybody worth knowing, from Winston Churchill and John Buchan to George and Bernard and Charlotte Shaw, Thomas Hardy, you name it, Noel Coward. There is almost nobody of any consequence in English life between, I would say, 1916 and 1917, and Lawrence's death in 1935, with whom Lawrence was not on friendly terms. He was an extraordinary personality. Magnetic is the only word that one can use for it, even though it's much overused, but it's true.
A friend both to Winston Churchill, as you pointed out, and to Lady Astor, the woman who once told Churchill that if he were her husband, she would put poison in his coffee.
And he said, "And if I were your husband, madam, I'd drink it."
Michael, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
The book, again, is Hero, The Life and Legend of Lawrence of Arabia. Michael Korda with us from our bureau in New York. 3 years ago, Public Radio launched a quest for new on-air talent. Anyone could submit a two-minute audio entry that demonstrated hostiness. Over 1,400 entered. In the final round of the competition, Glenn Washington produced a pilot for a show about storytelling called Snap Judgment.
When I was a kid, a black kid, I attended an all-white school. One Monday morning, I knew for sure I was about to get a beat down. My only hope was maybe, just maybe, if I pressed my lips together real tight, maybe I could pass for white and avoid the beating. Well, I tried. It didn't work, but the art of passing has intrigued me ever since. Welcome to Snap Judgment. It's that fork in the road. It's the right or the left. Jump or don't. I'm your host, Glenn Washington, and today on the show, a boy passes for a man. A man passes for a medic, and somebody thought he was passing for an upstanding citizen until he met the War on Terror. Stay tuned.
Three winners emerged from that competition. Today, Glenn Washington's Snap Judgment runs on NPR member stations across the country. It's also available as a podcast. Today, you have a chance to pitch your story to Snap Judgment and Glenn Washington. Listeners who call the hotline at the radio program have 3 minutes to pitch. We'll give you one. Call us and tell us about a decision that changed your life. 800-989-8255. Better yet, zap us an email. The address is talk@npr.org. You can also write us on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Glenn Washington is host and executive producer of Snap Judgment and joins us now from member station KQED in San Francisco. Nice to have you on the program today.
Great to be here, Neil. I can't believe you found that program, though, to lead the show with.
and one thing we should note, obviously your program is not live.
The program is not live. We do a lot. It takes a lot of time, oftentimes, to interview people, to put these stories together. 7 hours of interview going into a five-minute story. You can't quite go live.
And where do you find these stories?
Well, you know, it's interesting, actually. When we first started this whole project off, I was speaking to one Ira Glass.
Yes, we've heard of him.
Yeah. He's been around a little while. And he said, you know, hope you have a lot of interesting friends because, you know, when you're getting a show like this launched, you're going to need them. And I think we've talked to all of them so far. Some amazing stories. And now that the engine's going a little bit more, we're able to branch out quite a bit more widely than we have in the past.
It's been said a first radio program is hard, but a fifth, sixth, and seventh radio programs, those are really hard.
Yeah, we've been having a fantastic time, though. People have amazing stories. I am always stunned. I think I've got the best job in the world. People have the most incredible adventures, interesting perspectives. What we really try to do, Neil, is to tell a story where you elucidate not just what happened to you, but your perspective on the world. And sort of our take on it is, you know, we're not going to necessarily fact check everything that you say in a traditional public radio manner. If you tell me that your grandmother's a witch and she's bent on the destruction of your firstborn child, I'm not going to ask anything about Wicca. I'm going to say, well, what'd you do next? We accept your worldview, whatever it is, and go on from there. And that's kind of like our version of storytelling.
And story's too good to check. So,
story's too good to check. And, you know, and but it is a different, maybe it's a different type of truth. But as you especially would know, that if you, these shows that we have today, different types of people yelling about different types of things, a different type of truth can often be found within, when you look for an emotional resonance as opposed to a strict sort of, did this happen? I'm going to go and send a bunch of reporters to fact check everything that you say. What happened to you? How did you feel about it? Might be, in fact, more important.
And I've read that you say you helped prepare yourself for this in part by growing up amidst a group you describe as a religious cult.
I didn't know I was preparing myself for this, but I thought I had a youth that was misspent in the clutches of a religious cult, and now it seems like the stories from that time period end up being solid gold. All cults, I think, Neil, are very similar. They're much the same. You have a charismatic figure. You have, there's a secret. Y'all just know a special secret. Nobody else knows. But then there's an insularity to it as well that distinguishes cults from any other group with wacky beliefs. And so we had that. We had the end time was going to happen any minute. You had to be ready. The particular, I think, specialty of our cult was that we thought we were going to be whisked off to the caves of Petra while the rest of y'all burnt up in the final days.
Petra, of course, in Jordan, which we've been talking about the rest of the program. But anyway.
That's right.
When the end days don't come, you have to come up with some pretty creative explanations.
Well, that's just it. If you say that Jesus is coming next week and Jesus doesn't show up, well, then you got some explaining to do in order to keep the church filled. And so I studied, my misspent youth was at the foot of masters who kept those seats filled. And it was very, very interesting to me to look back on this now and realize that from thence came a type of a storytelling palette. But I think it's very true.
We're talking with Glenn Washington. If you'd like to pitch him a story, that changed your life, a story that might appear on Snap Judgments. We'll give you a minute to do it. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Kevin's on the line calling from Long Island.
Hi, Dale.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
My story is quite simple, but it changed my whole life one day. I was 13 years old. I knew I wanted to become a veterinarian. I knocked on the door of a local veterinarian who was well-respected in the community, said, I'd like to be a veterinarian. I'd like to work here. You don't have to pay me. At which point, he laughed in my face and showed me a mop, and 2 years later, he hired me. But what that taught me was the power of being bold and putting yourself out there and in a deferential way, offering yourself up as a good candidate. I think that's a tremendous lesson to me, and it should be to many young people I know.
All right. We'll put that in the hopper, Kevin, and see if we'll get back to you for perhaps an appearance on Snap Judgment.
Okay.
What did you think of his story, Glenn?
Kevin, go on ahead with your veterinarian business. I think it's fabulous. I think he took the right lesson from it. The types of stories, though, that we're looking for, you oftentimes have to come face-to-face with a different version of yourself. And let me give you an example. When we first started this show, one of the contests, we had various challenges. What happened was I heard about this contest. It's like, do you want to be the next public radio host? And I thought, sure. But what I was really doing, Neil, because I thought that people like Neil Cohen have the greatest jobs in the world.
You found out differently since, but go ahead.
But I was like, well, you know what? They're not going to give me that job, but at least, and everyone in public radio understands this, at least I want to preserve my right to complain. Because that's what pledge breaks are all about. You know, we can't wait to send in a check, but then we own this. This is part of us. We are all in this together. And so I thought, you know what? I'm gonna send in my little clip here just so that I can call in and tell them what I don't like. And I forgot about it. And about 3 months later, they called and said I was one of 10 finalists, which was great. But they started doing these crazy challenges. And one of the ones I remember specifically was when they said, okay, Glenn, you've got 15 – no, we're going to give you a word, and then we're going to give you 15 seconds, and we want you to riff off of it for 2 minutes. And I was like, what's the word? What's the word? On your mark, get set, go. And the word was grace. And I had – a few seconds to think about it, and given my background, as you kind of described, Neil, mm-hmm. It's a bit of a softball for me, given the connotations. And so I was thinking, but I couldn't think of anything. Still, I thought I should be able to do this. I should be able to do this. I should be able to do this. I couldn't think of anything. Go. And whenever I'm at a loss for a story, they always generally end up referring to my mother. And I remember I was actually in Japan, and I was minding my own business. It was a few years back, and I got a call from my mother, and I could hear this clapping and shouting and screaming in the background. And she was talking to me. She's like, Glenn, I can't believe you did this to me. And I was like, Mama, I can't believe you treat me this way. Mama, what is it? I found it, son. I found it. The church ladies found it with me, and we're coming for you. Mother, what are you talking about? And you have to understand, at this point in my life, I was itinerant. I didn't really own anything. The only thing I had was this collection of books that I was keeping stored in my mother's basement. Books from Japan, books about primates, books about whatever. And they were all being stored in my mother's basement for this time in the distant, distant future when I thought, I'm going to get back there and I'm going to be able to enjoy reading these things for a change.
Glenn, tick, tick, tick.
Well, that's how it was. And she said, I found your book, Satanic Verses. And how you gonna bring the verses of Satan up in my house, son? We gonna burn these books. And I hear the clapping and the shouting in the background. My mother, do not burn my books. We're burning them, son. You cannot bring the verses of Satan in my house. Mom, Satanic Verses is not what you think it is. Do not burn them. Click. and the phone was off. And it was that point, I think, in the storytelling, when I finally got back a hold of her, she told me that I had to restore the grace of my home.
We're talking with Glenn Washington about his program, Snap Judgment. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Well, that's one story. Let's hear another. This is Richard. Richard with us from Marshfield in Wisconsin.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, Richard. You've got a minute.
I got a minute. At 17 years old, I decided to take my first drink. And I eventually became an alcoholic. And every decision I made under the influence of alcohol had changed my life and practically destroyed everything that I was ever wanted to accomplish. When I stopped drinking, I then decided to become sober and look back and find out how alcohol affected my life and became a person in a sober world.
Have you done redemptive stories like that, Glenn?
We have. And congratulations to you for kicking that. It's amazing. One of the stories that we did do was by a guy by the name of Justin McClure, who broke up with his wife, was having some issues, got 3 DUIs within the course of like 2 weeks. And he found out, and for him it was the best thing ever. They put Justin in a room and said, "We're going to put you in prison and throw away the key for a while, or you're going to participate in this program where you have to be back by 7 o'clock every day." He went to work, no car, and he had to run there and back. If he was 1 minute late, he was going in the slammer. And he said it was the best thing that ever happened to him, that exercise of having to run. And he's a marathoner now because he had to run from his workplace to be on time. And again, those stories are, the redemptive stories are really amazing.
Richard, thanks very much for the call, and hang in there. Glenn Washington, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Neil. I appreciate it.
Snap Judgment can be heard Saturday nights at 11 on KQED in San Francisco. That's where Glenn Washington joined us from. It's also available as a podcast. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.